Welcome to the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com.
Hello, I am Steve Abramowitz, and this is the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. Welcome to our People in the News, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with special guest Daniel C. Turner. Power of the Future thinks America must be generous stewards of our environment for future generations. Sharing facts about energy policies, organizations, and activists creates a better informed population. They disseminate research, share facts and truths, engaging at the local level and interacting with the media. With so many loud voices in the energy conversation, Power of the Future highlights truth, unmasks agendas, exposes hypocrisy, and reduces hyperbole. Their work is dedicated to the men and women who power the future through their hard work, sweat, determination, and grit. Every time we turn on a light or start up our car, whether consciously or not, we are acknowledging their labor, and they say thank you. Daniel Turner, founder and executive director, for nearly 20 years, he has worked in communications and public affairs for several nonprofits and various campaigns, including his home district, New York 9, for his Uncle Bob Turner's successful race. Daniel started PTF to advocate for rural energy communities in the Power Center of Washington, D.C., which makes those policy decisions which impact energy workers. Daniel is an expert in energy and environmental issues as they pertain to jobs, rural communities, the U.S. economy, international affairs, and our national security. His op-eds have been published in dozens of outlets, and he is a regular guest on multiple programs on Fox News, Fox Business, Newsmax, and One American News Network. He has appeared on over 1,000 radio programs. Now add Heartland Journal podcast to his credits. He has finally arrived. Daniel is a native of Queens, New York. He and his spouse live on a working farm where they focus on heritage breeds, including sheep, chickens, and turkeys. Their farm staff consists of two blue heelers who never tire. Daniel also serves on the board of directors of a nonprofit that does relief work in Africa. Wow, when do you sleep? Hello, Daniel. How are you today?
Thank you for having me on your program. It's great to be with you.
Nice to meet you. You're not in New York today. You said you're in Virginia.
No, yeah, I'm born and raised in New York City, but I've lived quite some time now in central Virginia. Now I'm a country boy. So,
Well, there's crazy scenes out of New York City these days. I'm glad you're not there. Mayor Adams begging for more illegals now. Water pipes bursting and flowing from 20th floor high rises. $15 tolls just to get into the city. What is up with your New York?
I know, it's devastating. And as much as I love the city, and my family's been there since before the Civil War, we're longtime New Yorkers, and all of my family, except for me, really lives in New York City still, and they're proud New Yorkers, and they don't want to give up. They say, this is our city. We're not going to surrender to these crazy ideologies. And I admire that greatly. I didn't. I left New York when I was 18, and I never moved back. And a lot of Power of the Future and why I started it stems from that. There's this huge disconnect between urban elites that have the money and the power, and they make policy decisions, and the men and women in rural America whose lives are impacted by those policy decisions, whether it's energy, which is what I focus on, oil, gas, coal, fracking pipelines, but ag policy, farm policy, manufacturing policy, they're all made by people who live in, you know, high rises in the middle of Manhattan and haven't had dirt under their nails in their entire life. And that disconnect is causing a lot of problems in our country and our economy.
That is a good observation. Very well said. In Washington State, where producer Steve still sits, and I fled 2 years ago, they want to ban natural gas and make everyone spend $20,000 to $50,000 to retrofit their homes, whether you can afford it or not. New York isn't even that crazy yet, but I do remember de Blasio wanted buildings made of bamboo. He's not the mayor anymore, thank God, but an AOC chased Amazon away and all their jobs. Are the New York politicians economically illiterate or just all in on the Green New Deal?
All of the above, and yes, definitely economically illiterate. They don't understand how the economy works. They've never really had real jobs. Right, and so now they have power to make policy decisions, and they don't know what they're making those decisions based on. Here's the best example, right? We have this huge push in the Biden administration and by just urban elites, liberal Democrats writ large, this huge push to ban fossil fuels. No more fossil fuels. Keep it in the ground, right? Biden ran his whole 2020 campaign on that. No more fossil fuels. And then yet you have this pivot to we're going to invest in roads and bridges and infrastructure and wind and solar, which are all made from fossil fuels, right? You can't make cement and steel without coal. And yet we are, Biden is talking about how we're going to rebuild America with cement and steel. Well, you need an awful lot of coal for that. Where are we going to get it from? You can't make solar panels without burning coal. The crystalline quartzite, same as the on your phone, right? It's not glass. It's a type of crystal that only heats to a certain temperature, around 2,000 degrees, that you can only get from the heat of coal. So how are we going to make solar panels without coal? The frames are made from steel. The wind turbines that are anchored in the ground are 30,000, 3,000 tons, excuse me, 3,000 tons of cement and rebar. That's all made from coal and iron and the plastic. And so that's the type of policy disconnect we have. On the one hand, fossil fuels bad. On the other hand, we're pushing an entire economy that is reusing fossil fuels a different way. They're just a lot more expensive than they were to begin with. That's the illiteracy that we're dealing with of our power brokers. And boy, are we feeling the effects of it.
Yeah, I want to get deeper into that as we go along, but I want to digress for just a quick second. Tell us about why your uncle's race was historic.
That was a great time. That was the famous Anthony Weiner scandal of 2010, and he had to resign. My uncle actually ran against him in the general of 2010, lost, got 44%, which was pretty remarkable for a district that was held by previously Geraldine Ferraro, for those who remember that name. And then Chuck Schumer had it when he was the congressman. And then
Walt
when Schumer
Mondale, Walter
entered,
Mondale's vice presidential pick, I think the first woman to run as a VP.
bingo, exactly. You know your history. And then after Schumer ran for Senate, Anthony Weiner was his groomed candidate to take it.
No pun
So he
intended.
lost the 2010 general election. But then the Weiner scandal happened. And kudos to Andrew Breitbart. We miss him desperately. He did yeoman's work, unafraid of being canceled before canceling was a thing, right? He went out there and said, "This is false. This guy is doing something. This is not a hack. This guy is bad news." And he took slings and arrows, but he was proven right. So Weiner had to resign in scandal. And they said, "Well, Bob, you just ran 4 months ago. You've got your campaign team basically still around. Run again." And he did. And that time he won overwhelmingly. And it was pretty remarkable to see a conservative Republican pro-life from Brooklyn and Queens holding Chuck Schumer's old seat. The funny thing is that in the 2010 census, New York was losing districts because the population's shrinking. And as soon as Uncle Bob won, they were like, "Yeah, we're getting rid of that district." And they eliminated it. And so he only served about a year and a half. And that was that. But
That
they were
was the
not.
ninth. That was the ninth district, right? Which covered Brooklyn and Queens, and even former New York City Mayor Ed Koch crossed party lines to endorse him, your uncle.
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. It was really a historic moment. And they were not going to allow Bob Turner to be a congressman from New York, so they just got rid of the district altogether.
And is Anthony Weiner still a factor there, or is he damaged goods and never to be seen again?
I think he is around. I think he tries to do a sort of culture podcast. I don't think he's dabbling in politics anymore, but I'm not sure. And last I saw his, which is kind of creepy, his ex-wife is now engaged to or dating George Soros's son. And
Alex
if there's
Soros,
a
yeah.
more
Oh.
weird mashup of people, add Huma Abedin to Alex Soros, and you just got.
Yeah. We'll wait
You've
till
got
her
the gates
parents
of
find out that
hell
he's
opening.
Jewish. They'll see. They won't be too happy about that. All right, because she's
Anyway.
involved with the Muslim Brotherhood, but that's another story for another day. Okay. So enough about that. We've made fun of outdoor solar panels a few times now on this show, mostly because of golf ball-sized hailstorms that ruin billion-dollar projects like in Wyoming. Mother Nature wins again. What do you make of these municipalities willing to throw all this money at windmill and solar panels on public land, even, with such a terrible track record of not getting paid back.
Yeah, that's what explains, it's a great can of worms you're opening. It explains why at the end of 2022, when the votes had been cast and the Democrats were going to lose the House, that they had to rush through this quote Inflation Reduction Act, which they admitted after it was passed, was an enormous spending bill. And it's how they shut up municipalities, mayors, governors, Republicans, right? There's bipartisan stupidity going on here. They just buy them, and you have all this federal dollars coming to the local level saying, hey, look, here's a $600 million grant. And I deal with this on the regular where they're trying to close a coal mine, saying, here's a $600 million grant for wind and solar, but the condition is you've got to close the coal mine. You got to close the coal plant. And if you're the utility commission, you don't really care if it's working, right? People have to pay their bills regardless. If the electricity stops working, you're not going to lose your job. So $600 million, yeah, I'll take it. And so these failed wind projects and solar projects are all just bought and paid with slush fund money. Is wind and solar don't work. They're incredibly expensive. They're made overseas in China with slave labor. They're in markets that are controlled by communist China that use slave labor in sub-Saharan Africa to mine the rare earths. And they don't work. I tweeted the other day during the eclipse, and the pushback I got was amazing. I tweeted that during the eclipse, there were multiple gigawatts of solar that were not functioning. And people went apoplectic. You're such an idiot. Of course it's not working. It's dark. Well, there's an eclipse every night, right? It's different celestial bodies that are rotating. But there's an eclipse every night, and it lasts. And so what's the point of building these things that only work intermittently? When they don't work, when there's a delta, you've got to go to what does work, and that's fossil fuels. I'll throw nuclear in there too, but that's fossil fuels. So why are we investing in something that can at best only work half the time? At best, only half the time.
And today they just said that they have to use diesel to defrost the windmills. And diesel is pretty counterintuitive to green energy, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's just pure, it's pure nonsense, right? You mentioned a very important thing, which are hailstorms. I know there's legislation right now in the Senate to make hailstorms illegal. So I don't know if that will affect change going forward. But if there are another hailstorms, if there are hurricanes, if there are tornadoes, right? We're building these in the heartland. What happens when a tornado rips through there? I do town halls at the local level with local farmers who get approached by these utility companies because they are desperate for land. That's the biggest problem with green energy is how many, literally millions of acres, and I can get into more of that in a second, but they're desperate for land. They have money, right? They've got federal money, and they don't have any obstacles. There's no lawsuits. There's no green group that's gonna, they want to put down a 100,000-acre wind farm. There's never short-haired grouse. There's never a rare snail. There's never a sacred Native American land. You want to drill a quarter of an acre for a well. Everything in the world is discovered there that's rare. Everything, native ceremonies, artifacts, but hundreds of thousands of acres of wind and solar, poof, it's all good. So they're desperate for land, so they're going to farmers saying, please lease us your land. And I go, sign. I'm not going to tell you to not sign, but I got some questions for you. You raised the first one. If a hailstorm comes and smashes all of these, and you've got probably conservatively hundreds of thousands of shards of crystalline quartzite on the ground, who cleans it up? You as a landowner or the utility company? And how quickly will they show up? What's the environmental impact study of hundreds of thousands of shards of crystalline quartzite? Now, when it rains, what does that do to groundwater contamination and aquifers? Because this isn't glass, right? These are toxic materials. Well, there's no environmental impact study. Why not? Well, because they're green. We get waived. There's no environmental impact. So we don't know what will happen. So if your cattle are on the farm adjacent to it and there's rain and now there's mud and there's river flow, what's going to happen? We don't know, right? So I tell these farmers, I'm not telling you not to sign. But one, when has anyone come to small town America saying, I got a scheme to get you rich, right? There's a whole Broadway musical based on it. When has anyone ever done that? And two, do you know all of these answers? And if you don't, I would think twice before you sign away grandpa's farm to a company not based in America that's going to build a product not based in America for a community that is not even your community. It's likely getting, through transmission lines sent somewhere else. I'd think twice. That's what I've been facing a lot of.
That's an interesting point. And if, of course, if they're in agriculture on that farm, and like you said, the groundwater gets contaminated, and that's not good because there is actually a waste that is produced while that energy is being generated, let's just say, and that would not be good for human consumption. So you mentioned the eclipse that was yesterday, and the dumb bums on The View said the eclipse was caused by global warming.
I love that.
Apparently unaware it happens all the time and not an earth pollution cause phenomenon like night. The media doesn't help with the inconvenient truth. Let's just say that. I remember the research on warming had all the sensors placed on hard blacktop parking lots under air conditioning to pad the stats. Is anything true about CO2 and warming that we've been told?
No, and that does not. People are going to say, "Take off your tinfoil hat. You're crazy." An article came out about a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was in the Daily Caller, which was a study that NOAA itself, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, NOAA is in charge of all things wind and air and oceans and temperatures. NOAA admitted that, get this number, 96%, 96% of their thermometers were faulty. And so if we're taking a baseline temperature of America and we get these numbers like we did at the beginning of January, 2023 was the hottest year on record, right? Members of Congress, everyone had the talking point. Hottest year in 180,000 years, which is amazing that we have records that accurate from 180,000 years ago. But if 96% of your thermometers are faulty, and we're not talking about is it 6 degrees or 9 degrees. We're talking about is it 6.15 or 6.17. We're talking about fractions of a degree to get the hottest temperature on record. How can you say these are accurate numbers when 96%? And you just raised the great point. They put them on concrete. They put them on asphalt. They put them under air blowers and air ducts. Anyone who listens to the radio in a metropolitan area will hear them say, traffic and weather, and on I-95, you got this and that, and the weather at LaGuardia Airport is 96 degrees. That is the official temperature of New York City. LaGuardia Airport is 1,000 acres of cement with a thin layer of jet fuel. Why is that the official thermometer of New York City? Why is it not Central Park? Central Park is probably 95.3. LaGuardia is 96, is probably more 98. But that delta is how we're saying hottest degree on hottest year on history. We need to spend $1 trillion on wind and solar. So it's all one gigantic fraud. The whole thing,
I
one
mean, I love
gigantic
being able
fraud.
to call them out on their fake stats, but I also remember last summer, during the weather reports on various local news stations, where you would see 65, 67, 1,000 degrees. It's like, well, there went Bozeman, Montana, like, because they obviously didn't translate it onto the screen that they were trying to bump it up to get the average completely out of whack, so they could turn around and say what you just said, the hottest summer in the history of summers. So Montana and South Carolina are big on this new technology, carbon capture. What's the point of that? And don't trees need carbon to be healthy and in turn pump out the oxygen for people and fish to breathe?
Carbon capture is the new it thing. Just like the other programs I mentioned, there's so many federal dollars that are thrown at carbon capture that if you're the governor, you're like, hell yeah, I'll take $4 billion to build this carbon capture facility. So again, I don't begrudge people. Well, I do. We shouldn't be bribing our governors to do bad things. But that's a reality, right? We're getting all this federal money to build these carbon capture facilities. There's no proof that this works. I mean, didn't people in the Middle Ages go insane in alchemy trying to turn lead into gold, right? And I
And
think,
drinking lead, yeah, they went insane for
I think
sure.
that's what carbon capture, quite frankly, is. This notion that we're going to build a machine that's going to suck the carbon out of the atmosphere. To transport it, we've got to liquefy it. So you have to pressurize it to amazingly low temperatures. We're going to load it on tankers. and because we're buying carbon capture from Japan, and then we're going to boat them across the Pacific, and then we're going to pump all that carbon in the tundra, and that's somehow green. And you know, gas never escapes from underground, right?
No,
So I don't understand what the hell we're doing,
especially in cold
right?
temperatures.
I don't understand what the purpose of this is. This idea that carbon
They're
is
storing it
somehow,
underground, aren't they? In the big taverns, almost
yes,
like, yeah.
injecting it underground,
Is
and
it
you know, people that
explosive?
would, I don't know what's going to happen when we inject hundreds of millions of cubic meters of carbon underground. Last week,
I
Senator
mean,
Kennedy
hydrogen
was.
is. We saw the blimp, right?
Yeah, I mean, carbon
Hindenburg.
is not explosive, but it
That's
will be
good.
pressurized, I assume. There was a video of Senator Kennedy interviewing a young man from Alaska on a climate hearing. It went a little bit viral about 2 weeks ago, and he was asking this very handsome young skier who was there about climate change. He was like, "Let me ask you some questions because you're obviously here to ban fossil fuels and talk about climate change. What is CO2? No answer." I was like, "Well, do you know how much CO2 is in the atmosphere?" No answer. "Is it a lot?" He's like, "I mean, it's a lot, right? CO2 is 0.04% of our atmosphere. It's 0.04%. So this notion that we have all this carbon that we're dying, it's part of the hyperbole which we saw in COVID. We saw the hyperbole of fear and to scare people. John Kerry says this all the time. Millions of people are dying from climate change. Could you name one? Right? Could you? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will testify that or say that whole communities in America are dying because of fracking. Just name one. Like show me the one kid who's sick from fracking. Because you know CNN would have him on TV all the time. So it's all just a bunch of crap after a while.
The only CO2 poisoning I can think of is the masks that we were forced to wear on our faces for days on end and hours on end that got sweaty and completely gross. All right, moving on. Have you seen the pollution and eco disaster in the Darien Gap and the Rio Grande border where all the human illegal crossing is happening in the name of humanity?
The waste that's left behind, there's a direct correlation between fossil fuel rich economies and cleanliness and hygiene. And the more of a robust society you have with fossil fuel lifestyle, the cleaner your society is. So those images are because it's a group of people who are not from rich economies. And sadly, those are the ones that pollute. Those are the ones that throw waste. Those are the ones that throw plastic in the ocean. We've banned plastic straws all across America because 98% of ocean plastic comes from China, and the other 2% basically comes from other Southeast Asian countries. But we are banning straws, and not one person, even Republicans, not one person had the gumption to say, "Can you show me one of these beaches that is strewn with plastic and refuse in America?" I grew up on the beach in New York City in Rockaway Beach. I've never seen oceans strewn across. I've been to California, I've been to Alaska, I've been to Florida, I've been on a lot of beaches in America. Where do we don't. So why are we punishing ourselves? Right? And that's the other nefarious thing about the green movement. China pollutes, we have to ban straws. China pours atmospheric crap into the air on a daily basis. We have to buy their solar panels, right? We're always punishing ourselves for the sins of this global climate initiative. China's not doing it. India's not doing it. Russia's not doing it. Saudi Arabia's not. No Arab nation is doing it. Brazil isn't doing it. Why the hell are we and the idiots in Western Europe? We're the only ones beating ourselves about this global climate crisis when we're not even causing it. There is no
Yeah.
crisis. But if we have to play the game
Had
there is, we're
we
not even
stayed at the
causing it.
Paris Accords, we'd be in much worse shape than even now. Our friends
I
at
agree.
the EPA announced new regulations on yet another Friday. It was last Friday. This time targeting heavy-duty vehicles, including trucks and buses, that are the strongest ever greenhouse gas emission standards of their kind, quote unquote. Many trucks will now have to be electric and produce zero emissions. Like bubbles, I don't know. During winter, we saw trucks slow stuck on Donner Pass in California. Teslas couldn't charge quickly in cold and frozen plug-in chargers, couldn't even get them into the car. if they could even find the stations. This is pretty unworkable, isn't it? But yet, there our betters just decreed it not even a week ago.
Yeah, this is another example of this case of urban elites that make policy that are disconnected from the needs of the American people. The trucking association was not part of this conversation. Delivery organizations were not part of this conversation. This is just a bunch of yahoos at the EPA who want to pass rules. And so now we are forced to comply. It's kind of like almost like a revolution of back in the, the Stamp Act and the Quartering Act, right? Like, I have decreed thus, and you will now obey. There's a great quote by Thomas Sowell that I always use when I get into this conversation, and he says, in economics, there aren't solutions, there are trade-offs. EVs and electric trucks are presented to us as this solution. Again, there's no problem, but let's pretend there is, and we'll say this is the solution. But it's not a solution, it's a trade-off, right? They're not green or clean. That's just all a myth. And I can get into that more in a second. But one of the trade-offs is that they're very expensive, more than four times the price of a good 18-wheeler that you see, like Peterbilt, et cetera. They're 150, 180 for cost, are expensive, 180,000. EVs are closer to 400,000. So they're very expensive.
Trucks, you're talking about the trucks.
The trucks themselves, an 18-wheeler, a diesel one, can go around 1,200 miles, and then it has to fill up again for gas, and it will fill up in about 15 minutes. An electric one can go around 300 miles, and then it has to charge for 10 hours.
Whoa.
Now, that's just the laws of physics and electro and electricity. I wish it weren't that way. You learn the Biden administration wishes it weren't that way, but it is. And the EPA passing a law saying this is what you will do does not take away the geographical distance or shortcomings, the charging shortcomings. It cannot present as much electricity. So if you're ordering a good that's got to get its way from, I'm in Virginia, say it's coming from Tennessee, right? Landed at Memphis Airport, it's coming my way to Virginia.
That's
Well,
where
now it
FedEx
can do
is.
it. Yeah, now it can do it on one tank of gas. And in one trip. But if I use electric, well, now I need 2 days and to charge. And that driver is going to be charged the second day. So what's the price of the good I'm purchasing? And we are moving towards a delivery world, especially if you live in the urban areas, right? You want your Uber Eats delivered, you want your grocery, you want same day, you want.
Yeah, that
So we're
whole
moving towards.
revolution of next day delivery, or what was the old tagline, when it absolutely positively has to be there overnight. Not
Exactly.
going to do that in a 10-hour fill up on a truck that only can go 300
Not at the
versus
same price point.
five refills, 50
Yeah.
hours of charging. Yeah, it's crazy.
Not at the same price point. And that's why it's not a solution, it's a trade-off. And if the American people know, hey, you'll still get this, but it's going to take longer and it's going to cost more money, how many of them are going to say, yes, yeah, sign me up? They're not. But they're not told this, right? They're told, swap out this truck, put in this truck, it's going to work. It's
Save the
not the
planet.
same thing.
Less than 1% of new truck sales in the US are zero emissions. And I saw where sales are actually down because nobody wants them. Electric vehicle sales are down 7% so far this year in the US as consumers say they want longer lasting batteries and more reliable charging networks, according to CBS.com. Well, we don't have
Yeah.
either of those. Biden sold all the oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We need that in case of war, by the way.
Yeah.
He just declined to refill it, saying price is too high, which he caused. Well, prices aren't coming down, so we are at risk of blackouts and military readiness, right?
100%. And now we do fingers crossed policy. And this is what Biden does all the time. Fingers crossed, right? Let's hope there aren't bad problems, because if there are, we're in a pickle. We have around 20 days of petroleum reserves left in the strategic reserves. We're supposed to have around 3.5, 4 months. For context, when Hurricane Katrina hit, we used around 20, 25 days of reserves because the Gulf Coast was wiped out and it took a while to get back online. But we said, don't worry about it, right? We're going to stabilize this part of the economy because we've got all these reserves for this black swan event. Well, that's gone now. The reserves are gone. So what do? We hope there's no Hurricane Katrina. We hope there's no terrorist attack. We hope whatever other black swan event happens. So we cross our fingers. But that's not the way a country is supposed to work, a serious nation. That's not the way a serious government is supposed to work. It's people say, well, the president shouldn't have that authority. He does, but I don't think anyone could conceive that the president would use their strategic reserves, let alone the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, would weaponize government for their political purposes this way. But he does, and he gets away with it. Heck, look at the student loan decision, right? The Supreme Court says you can't do it. He's like, doing it anyway. Too bad. If you're the branch that's supposed to enforce the laws, that requires some humility and some self-restraint to say, I am not allowed to do that. Biden doesn't have it. The only thing he can't do as president is clearly close the border.
Yeah,
Just
or find
ask
out who
him.
brought the white powder into his office. But he's acting like a dictator. How would we defend Taiwan in the Pacific like we did in World War II without it? Feeling it was the result of Pearl Harbor, so we could fight on two fronts. If Biden doesn't want to weaken us, he's doing everything perfectly to do it anyway.
It's really frustrating, and that's again, we are a fossil fuel based economy, and the only thing we can do as we try to perfect technologies, I don't know what tomorrow holds. I mean, I called my group Power the Future for that reason. I don't know what the future is going to be, but right now this is the way the world works. I'm tired of Plato. Like, we're going to find this. Let's be realistic and say this is reality, and let's build the greatest now possible. And the geniuses in that will discover something that I don't know what the hell it's going to be. It's going to be smarter than I can conceive, but they're going to build it in the reality now. And what Biden is doing is saying, we're going to have this perfect tomorrow. Let's get there, but we're crushing ourselves right now. So by electrifying everything, by getting rid of fossil fuels, by getting rid of reliable electricity, by depleting our reserves, we don't live in that fantasy land. We may build it one day, as our ancestors and our forefathers built the 21st century. But it's not here yet. And that's why we're punishing ourselves in the present, claiming we're going to have a better tomorrow. And we're not. The countries who rival us are our enemy. I hate the word adversary. Our enemies, they're living in the now and they are exploiting everything badly, right? I don't want to start polluting. I don't want to start imprisoning people, but they are exploiting the hell out of the now because China says tomorrow is ours. And America is punishing ourselves now, saying, who knows what tomorrow will bring? So, oh, it's just frustrating on so many levels.
We are a quarter by quarter Wall Street short-sighted culture, and they do the 1,000-year thing. But what is a reality is obviously the bottom line earnings. And so we have Ford and GM both looking at the numbers. And even if we doubled our 1% usage, the grid can't handle
No.
2%. So Ford is getting out of their deals
Yeah.
for EV, and the government invested $7 billion. Ford is really probably the subsidies probably dried up. So we put
Yeah.
$7 billion for a total of 7 EV stations in the country. It's supposed to be 500 or maybe
Yeah.
5,000, but they've only done 7.
Yeah.
They didn't spend $1 billion each on it, but the $7 billion has only gone towards 7 electrical vehicle stations.
Very
It,
expensive.
it, is the future of EVs over, or just pausing until economics catch up?
Well, the interesting thing, just in terms of car dealerships, the largest auto manufacturer, the largest one in the world, has refused to go electric, and that's
Toyota.
Toyota, because they look at the numbers and they say this is not sustainable. This isn't real. So we're going to stick with our hybrid model. Everybody knows the Prius. We are not going the EV route. And they got blasted by the Europeans, by the Americans. You have to go EV. And they're saying we're not because it doesn't work. I don't think the EV market is doomed. But I do know that just based on free markets, you're not going to get a good product unless the market is allowed to operate. And we're actually hurting the EV market by forcing it down people's throat. What's the purpose of Rivian coming up with a better truck if they know they can get a subsidy and they know there's a mandate for you to buy their truck, right? What's the purpose? And look at how so many of these Stellantis laid off hundreds of people right before. Oh, was it Valentine's Day or something? They sent an all staff email. Hey, everybody, we're going to work remotely on Friday. And all the workforce said, well, that's not good news. So, I mean, manufacturers don't really work remotely, right? Something that escaped the COVID people. So the industry itself is definitely struggling. China is clearly flooding the market with an inferior, crappy product, but that's what China does. But this government, this heavy-handed government isn't making a better product. And that's the beauty of the
Picking winners and
forecast.
losers has never proven to be a good
Yeah.
idea. And of course, cobalt is in those batteries.
Yeah.
Tennessee is a big cobalt miner. It's a very dirty process, certainly not Green New Deal compliant, more like future Superfund sites. During Obama, we had A123 batteries and Solyndra Solar, they went bust. All this money flushed to try to be alternative to gasoline. They keep failing because it's not economical and it's not always windy or so sunny outside.
Yeah.
Will we ever learn our lesson? Are we ever going to get some
No.
politics? No.
And that's why I think the green industry as a whole prefers to manufacture overseas, because it's a lot that they call it. Ford opened up an EV plant in Mexico, and they called it, they do it more efficiently, which is just an insult, right? There's a reason why they like making these things in China or using slave labor in sub-Saharan Africa to mine the cobalt. One, slave children don't require, sexual harassment and diversity training every Friday. There's no OSHA. There's no Greta Thunberg, right, knocking on the door and protesting. There's no EPA lawsuit. There's
Greenpeace.
no wages. There's no health care. And so they say, well, we manufacture these things in China because it's efficient. No, because there is no groundwater contamination rule, because no one cares. Pollute away. Don't make them work 20 hours a day. Who cares if they're 9-year-old girls? What I find the most disgusting is that some of the green billionaires who fund these green groups, Tom Steyer being the biggest example, his hedge fund is one of the largest owners in overseas minerals and coal. And Tom Steyer is like, remember he ran for president as the
Yeah.
green candidate. I will not have a coal worker in West Virginia. Yeah, but you're fine with a 7-year-old girl in Indonesia. You know why? Because she's making you a fortune, and she literally is. You're worth $4 billion, right? So you'll be damned if a coal worker in Wyoming is going to work in coal because of the environment. But you'll fund a bunch of children in sub-Saharan Africa, and they're up there on stage, and we give them awards. Now you're getting, like, goosebumps are
Yeah.
going. This is
Well,
my true
Hillary
ire.
Clinton flat out said we were going to put those coal miners out of business, and I
Yeah.
think Biden repeated that line as well. But Washington Senator Patty Murray, second in line to the presidency, Governor Inslee from Washington State polled less than 1% when he ran for president with Steyer as the green guy. They were fighting over who's greener.
Yeah.
They want to blow up the Snake River Dam, so even hydro isn't good enough for progressive politics.
Nothing is. Remember, Biden was pro natural gas because the fracking revolution was happening during his presidency. Of course, if something good happened during my presidency, I too would take credit for it, right? If the Yankees won the World Series, I'd be like, you know what? As president, I would take all the credit. That's what politicians do. Fracking happened while he was president, and he took credit for it. He loved natural gas, but now we hate natural gas, right? And who would have thought that Obama, who was natural gas king, now he's like, we got to get rid of natural gas too. The goalposts are never good enough, right? It's the same as, whether it's 15 days to slow the spread, to your kids have to stay home, to now you got to wear the face shield, to now you need a 17 booster. Now the goalposts are never good enough for the radical left on any issue, right?
Yeah.
Any issue, abortion,
After
education.
seatbelts, it was all downhill from there.
Exactly.
And again,
Once you see the
that state of
little.
Washington wants to actually ban natural gas where it's very cold in the winter, but it's the cleanest energy. And they put
Yeah.
this crazy cap and trade tax on and now have the highest fuel prices in the country to fill your car. So they refuse to learn, even at the pain of their constituents, which you think in the past would turn into vote the bums out, but they
Yeah.
seem very complacent with, they'll pay the extra tax. They're not going to really travel to California and see that it's a little cheaper down there, or travel to Tennessee and see that it's a lot cheaper over there. They
Yeah.
just suck it up. I don't really understand.
No, and that's a question when you have to ask them, when does it work, right? That would be my question over and over again for the Biden administration going into this presidential campaign. You've had 4-ish years. You've spent trillions. Our utility bills are still 30% higher. Our food prices are 30% higher. All require energy, right? Gas is very high. When does the good part kick in of going green? Germany's been doing this for 25 years. They've spent almost €1 trillion building wind and solar. They have the most expensive energy on the planet. Their economy is in full contraction. Germany, when did, if I'm a German young, and it's always, you know, history says it's always good to piss off young Germans, right? If I'm a young German and I'm looking around and I'm like, when does the good stuff start to happen, right?
Certainly
When,
not at the BMW plant or the Volkswagen plant or the Audi plant. So let me read this to you. Studies show most output of all 50 states, so their stupid attempt to kill carbon only did the opposite as intended, increased it. The researchers estimated that the world's emissions of carbon dioxide will exceed 40 billion tons in 2023, last year, including nearly 37 billion tons from fossil fuels. Overall emissions are up 1.1% compared to 2022 levels. So not only when is it getting better, when is it going to prove to be efficient and work?
It never is. And that's why all these phrases, zero emissions, green, clean, net zero, carbon neutral, they're all just political phrases. They're made up
Right.
by politicians for political purposes. They're not based in markets, they're not based in science, and we have to stop giving them credence.
Washington Department of Ecology's website says, Washington State, working to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to protect Washington's economy and environment from the effects of climate change. We track emission sources and require large facilities and state agencies to report their emissions. We talked about that. We publish an inventory of greenhouse gas emissions in Washington every 2 years. The Washington State Department of Ecology released statewide CO2 emissions for 2019, showing an increase of about 7% from 2018. Since 2012, Washington CO2 emissions have increased almost every year, and total emissions increased about 10% to 102.1 million metric tons. Washington's emissions are now 9% higher than 1990 levels. According to state law, emissions must fall, according to law, emissions must fall to just 51.4 million by 2030. So 50% below the 2019 emissions level, but they're going the completely wrong way. It's a farce that the residents and voters have to pay for.
It is, and I hate to ask how bad does it have to get before voters comply? Because you just pointed out, and you're 100% right, we're not there yet. They'll re-elect everyone in California. They'll re-elect everyone in Oregon and Washington. They'll keep flagellating themselves, saying, you know what, we need to suffer a little more, and eventually we'll be able to prove that we've lowered emissions. And I don't know how much worse it has to get. Again, you know, 30% increase in food prices, if you're making a certain salary, it's negligible. Joe Biden doesn't care. J John Kerry doesn't care. But in the average family of four, I think it's 58,500 is their salary. So if your chopped meat went from $6 a pound to $9 a pound, that's huge,
Or if you
right?
have to
And apparently they're
retrofit, if you
next.
have to retrofit your natural gas furnace in your house, right? I mean, it's crazy. And
Exactly.
then it used to be that ExxonMobil, Chevron were the big bad guys of the left. They'd always say they were gouging when prices were high, and they were gouging when prices were low. And then they turned their sights on things like natural gas and now hydro and cow flatulence and really anything that moves, including human beings and they're exhaling. Stanford University says globally, fires contribute about 6 million tons of carbon dioxide during the first 9 months of this year, 7 to 9% more than average. Sounds like that's good for trees, right? That didn't get burned up. They get that carbon, but yet they won't clear cut underneath the trees in California to make the Malibu fires less wild.
Yeah, same in Cal and in Canada and New York. That was in the news for days on end last year because whatever happens to New York is news for the whole nation. And New York was in that smog for a while, and we even felt it down here in Virginia, no doubt. The Canadian wildfires, same deal. You're not allowed to clear cut. You're not allowed to have forest management because we're going to be green. And the weird thing about the green movement is they don't realize like nature is not this pacific. You know, harm nature is brutal and rough. And if you leave nature to nature, things burn, right? Well, the reason why forests don't burn, England doesn't ever have the crazy wildfires America does, mostly because the big forests are all still owned by the Duke of this and the Marquis of that. It's their land and they preserve it and maintain it impeccably. But our governors, who are supposed to maintain, or the federal government, we say, no, we're going to let it be green. Because quite frankly, who runs for governor to do forest maintenance, right? Like that's the most boring thing on earth, right? So Gavin Newsom doesn't want to manage California's forests, right? He didn't run for governor to do something like that. He ran for governor for equity and equality. And so then the forests burn, and then he gets to say climate change. Woo, climate change. And then he washes his hand.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. It's
Forgetting
climate change.
that lightning does strike, and if the tinder is dry, you will get a forest fire. And also forgetting that there would be no Las Vegas, no Scottsdale, Arizona, no Israel, no Qatar if it wasn't for air conditioning. So the whole thing is really tinkering on the margins. I wasn't watching the clock. I had a lot more questions for you. I am running out of time here, so I'm just gonna have to jump to the punchline here. The National Renewable Energy Laboratory, in its 2024 study titled Achieving an 80% Renewable Portfolio in Alaska Rain Belt Cost Analysis, in the Alaska Legislature's House Special Committee on Energy, the NREL will make the dubious claim that Alaska can, with little risk, achieve an 80% renewable energy mix in Alaska's Rain Belt region by 2040. Thankfully, not 2030. The swath of land, nearly 500 miles long, is bordered by Fairbanks in the north, and Homer in the south is home to over 75% of Alaska's population. So, people, seniors, natives live off the oil royalties Alaska residents are entitled to and get to enjoy. What will happen to them and their economy in 2040 if no more oil from the richest oil region we've got besides Oklahoma and Texas is shut off?
Yeah, I go to Alaska several times a year. I know Alaska well. This is just such an absolute lie. This 80% number, it's 10% would be an absolute lie. I was in Alaska in early February where they were going through record cold. It was negative 26 degrees for the entire week I was there. Alaska's had its, I think they are 4 inches short of their snowiest winter on record. So Alaska has had a brutal, brutal winter, but it's not New York, so it's not national news. Alaska's had a brutal winter. When I was there, at negative 26, wind turbines don't work. They may be spinning, but they cannot generate a charge. You alluded to that earlier when you mentioned how, people with their Teslas, they don't work. In the freezing cold, they don't get a charge. People in the polar vortex found that out the hard way. So your wind power is completely useless at a negative temperature, which Alaska has months of the year. And then they had 120 inches of snow. And solar panels don't really do very well when they're under 5 feet of snow. So what kept Alaskans alive were fossil fuels. And you can say it should be something else. But again, that's Plato. It should be, and we all need our ideals, right? We should all strive to ideals, but we also have to live in this world. And for any Alaskan who weathered those weeks of negative 20 degree weather to say, well, I think we should go renewable, you're condemning your people to die because
Even the
you.
twenty-four hours on the Donner Pass in Tahoe this last winter, they would have died without fossil fuels too, because just keeping the engine running versus running out of a charge. Okay, last question. Tell us what, this is a harder one, but tell us what powerthefuture.com is doing in this world of energy politics and money. And I just saw that John Kerry, who was the climate czar, last 4 years on taxpayers' dime, burning jet fuel to preach end of the world, is stepping down for John Podesta. Not sure what his expertise is other than spending money. Biden gave him to be climate envoy. Not czar, but envoy, $375 billion approved in the 2022 climate law, also led the administration's climate task force, Podesta did. What great things can we expect out of that for a third of $1 trillion?
Yeah, this is the Biden administration buying their 2024 election. It's the same as student loan forgiveness, which they announced a third round today. This is having a slush fund that you can buy votes, that you can buy operatives. They plan on starting this climate corps of 20,000 young people by the end of the year who will raise awareness for climate issues. So if you're in, the Philadelphia suburbs and someone knocks on your door, it's not about Joe Biden's election. It's just about the climate corps. But if you want me to take your ballot, ma'am, I'll be glad to bring it to the. So 20,000 of these young people. This is just a green slush fund. It's very frustrating. The House that claims to have the power of the purse has not shut this down. I remember in the last administration, if the president announced anything, the House was like, nope, Nancy Pelosi said, don't have the money. And yet Biden can say anything, and they're like, well, what can we do? Right, he's the president. So I don't understand how there's this slush fund of, they didn't write him a $376 million check. right? So
Billion, billion-dollar check.
billion, excuse billion.
Yeah.
Oh. Where is your stewardship of the American tax dollars? So this is just an absolute nonsensical thing. I just want to throw in a plug for my organization because we have been suing John Kerry in the State Department for the last couple of weeks to get him to turn over his records. He refuses to say who his staff was, what their names were, what their qualifications were, what their meetings are. You're allowed to FOIA your mayor, your governor, to know what they're doing on your dime. They work for you. You're the taxpayer. There are no secret meetings. There are no secret phone calls. Your mayor can't say, "I'm not telling you who I'm talking to." If that's a taxpayer-funded phone call, a taxpayer-funded time, you have every right to know who they're talking to. John Kerry has said, "No, not telling you." And
Right.
so our lawsuit is a couple of weeks, a couple of months at this point in. I doubt we'll succeed because these are the DC courts. But this is one of the most pernicious human beings on the planet. He's a truly vile and loathsome individual, John Kerry. I have tremendous disdain for him. He would be glad to see millions, billions of people around the world die in miserable poverty for his green agenda because
And his
he.
daughter just said that, as a matter of fact, publicly, that the billions must die in order for this green
Billions.
agenda to work. What kind of sick
Not
people are
them.
these?
Not
Oh,
them,
no, they'll
though.
be fine. Yeah,
They're
billions of
fine.
dollars. Yeah. All
Those
right,
people.
Daniel. Well, thank you for your time. I hope to have you back before 2040 to see how this central planning actually plays out. So we're at the end here. So tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you and maybe follow your social media if you have that.
Thank you. It's great to be on your program. Daniel Turner. You can Daniel Turner PTF is my Twitter. Shoot me an email if you dislike anything I said or you want to challenge me. Daniel at powerthefuture.com. I engage with all my emails. Or powerthefuture.com. And these are really important issues. I am greatly appreciative of you raising them to your audience because energy powers everything.
That is, makes the world go round. All right. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
We may have to find somebody who covers that song because Morgan Wallen decided to throw a chair off of a building yesterday and get himself three federal offenses. So we may have to have a
Throw
morality clause in our music tracks. Or anyway, welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show. Producer Steve, what do you think of our guest Daniel Turner, founder Power the Future?
I really enjoyed having him on with us, and boy, you covered a lot of ground that I wanted to cover. So thank you very much. And it's all, Steve, when you start uncovering anything attached to the government, I'd say 80% of it is all bunk. It's all nonsense, and it is just a way to make money for a small fraction of the population and screw the rest of us over. I mean,
We
really.
have to. We just have to always remember that the Knights of the Round Table were nothing but mobsters and thugs.
That's right.
So, its government has been like that since the beginning. Okay, just the money is bigger now, although it's disappearing faster than we can spend it. Billionaire Ross Perot, not doesn't go as far as it used to. Billionaire ran for president as an independent. He told the shocking truth about American political corruption. Listen to every word we've been sold out for decades. Clip number one.
Listen to anything else I've said tonight, listen very carefully to this. Because this is coming to Washington to cash in and then go get a several hundred thousand dollar a year job as a foreign lobbyist and use your influence in the White House and Congress to ship not only jobs overseas, whole industries overseas. Here we go. Between 1980 and 1985, 76 former federal officials left office to become registered foreign agents. Now, this will break your heart. This is like a general switching armies in the middle of a war. They should come to serve and go home, not cash in. We got 35-year-old boys that have trouble holding a minimum wage job. They don't have any skills. All they've done is run around and, service a senior official in Washington. They're making $200,000 or $300,000 a year because they got his ear. Now, even worse, and I hope you will put your foot down and make both parties throw the cards on the table. They've got these people on leaves of absence now working on presidential campaigns. Foreign lobbyists on leaves of absence working on presidential campaign. That's like having Russian spies in the middle of a presidential campaign during the Cold War, because we're in a business war now, folks. Go down the list, 8 special assistants to the President of the United States, 5 assistants to the President of the United States, 2 deputy assistants to the President of the United States, 1 president's counselor, 1 deputy White House press secretary, 1 chief of staff to the Vice President of the United States, 2 U.S. trade representatives, 6 senators, 9 members of the House of Representatives, 12 senior Senate staff members, 5 senior House staff members, 4 retired generals, a chairman and a vice chairman of the U.S. International Trade Commission. And the sickest thing of all, we had a key guy on the Trade Commission leave and go to the other side in the middle of the negotiation. He knew the plans, the strategy, the details. As far as I'm concerned, that's economic treason. If we get there, we're going to clean this mess up on day one.
And Steve, let's not forget the, I think, 11 out of 12 of the FDA officials, the top dogs, all went to work for Big Pharma.
When the state does everything for you, it will soon take everything from you. You will then have no basis for personal freedom, political freedoms, or economic freedom. Who else said something like that? Slip number 2, please.
The essence of socialism is that you surrender quite a bit of power over your own life to the state. Well, we all do that to some extent, but of course it went much further. You pay very high taxes, and they wish to take even higher taxes because they think that politicians can spend money better than the people can spend it. The more you take away, the less there is for private industry, and that's where the creation of wealth comes. So you have to establish very clear limits on the role of government. And really, you know, politicians, I think, should sometimes just be a little bit more modest about their abilities than they are. We can't run everything, and we shouldn't try.
Mrs. Thatcher, though, you're going for attitudes. You're trying to change the way people think about their role in life. It's almost sometimes as though you think, by your own resolve, you can somehow inspire people to be different. You're still inside, I could suggest, a little of that very bright greengrocer's daughter who made herself a chemist, made herself a tax lawyer, made herself prime minister. Anybody can.
I don't really quite recognize what you're saying. I believe certain things very strongly. I believe that we were going towards a way of life in which people were constantly looking to the state to solve their problems and to do things for them. You know, when the state does everything for you, it'll soon take everything from you. You will then have no basis for personal freedom, political freedom, nor economic freedom. I saw it going much too far.
Yep.
Margaret Thatcher, that speech highlights the dangers of surrendering too much power to the state, emphasizing the need for limits on government intervention to preserve personal, political, and economic freedom. Okay. Important message from Dr. Phil. Family is under attack. The people in charge are hell-bent on destroying the family unit. Final clip, clip 3.
Across the 25 years that I've been doing the Oprah show and then my show, I've seen an evolution. I'm really concerned about what I'm seeing going on in this country. Family in America is under attack. We also started seeing this internet power give so much air to what I call the tyranny of the fringe. Now, with the internet, they're hijacking the narrative in America. I'm here to tell you, I love this country as imperfect as it is. I love it enough to be able to admit what's wrong with this country. I believe we are in a full-blown culture war. There was a time where everybody embraced facts, science, truth, history, not what they wished was true. But now that's all under attack. Somebody needs to look at the cancel culture and tell them to cancel themselves. People are afraid to speak up right now. We need a strong voice in this country that's willing to stand up and speak up, and one of those strong voices is going to be me. I'm going to stand with parents, and I'm going to stand with families. This entire network is going to be devoted to carrying that message. Across the 25
years that... I'm not a fan of Vladimir Putin or his way of running a nation, but there is one thing he said that I agree with entirely. That is the complete rejection of the terms parent one and parent two. It will always be mother and father. This attack on family culture is an effort to completely demoralize the population. I got more. You'll have to tune in tomorrow. Stay tuned for my thoughts of the day. All right, time for my quotes for the day. Before I share, I'll remind everyone to subscribe to heartlandjournal.com. Just go there and give us your email and zip code, and we'll deliver news right to your inbox for free as soon as it's up and running. But that is cool, right? I really hope you like it. We work hard on it, and you can join the conversation at Heartland Journal on Twitter and Facebook anytime. Many have blamed the gasoline shortages and long lines at filling stations in 1973 on the Arab oil embargo of that year. However, the shortages and long lines began months before the Arab oil embargo, right after price controls were imposed. Thomas Sowell, Basic Economics, A Citizen's Guide to the Economy. Control over the production and distribution of oil is the decisive factor in defining who rules whom in the Middle East. Christopher Hitchens, the quotable Hitchens, From Alcohol to Zionism, the very best of Christopher Hitchens. Unless government appropriately regulates oil developments and holds oil executives accountable, the public will not trust them to drill, baby, drill, and we must. Sarah Palin. You could not help being impressed by so much activity, even though you knew it was the activity of Satan. Upton Sinclair, Oil. Upton Sinclair Jr. was an American writer, muckraker, political activist, and the 1934 Democratic Party nominee for governor of California. He wrote nearly 100 books and other works in several genres. Got to pick up the pace, producer Steve. Oil is a fast-moving story that tells of the early years and greed of the oil industry. I read it. I enjoyed it. I recommend it. That is it for this episode. Thank you, Daniel Turner, for being the voice of energy workers advocating for their jobs and communities and pushing back on the radical environmental movement, which uses their vast power and resources to advance their agenda instead of heating homes and driving goods to market economically. This is goodbye for now. I'm your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com. See you all tomorrow. Peace in our time and glory to God. Yeah, I've been dreaming of the
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. From the heart.